Welcome to season 11 of Digital Learning Radio. I'm Catherine, and I'm joined by my co-host, Laura.
Hi.
In this season of the podcast, we're continuing the conversation of sharing what is inspiring us on our ongoing story of learning. Today, Laura is sharing what's been inspiring her this week, and I can't wait to hear what she's brought for our conversation today.
Well, I'm always excited to share because I'm always learning, and I've got to say, this week is a good one. And speaking of shares, I know I have continued thinking about your share from last week related to how to show and tell. And I really have referenced the six categories of images that you talked about to help me choose the best representation for concepts as I'm working on a slide deck for an upcoming meeting. So thank you for that.
Yay.
What about you? I know this book and our conversation last week really tackled some big picture ideas and maybe larger lenses for thoughtful design. But do you have any updates with the now what work related to how to show and tell?
Well, Laura, it sounds like you're doing a better job at now what than I am. I have to admit that I haven't made any concrete steps since we last recorded, but I agree those six image categories are very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked on a slide deck for a tiny presentation this week, and the slide template used puzzle pieces as the border, along with some floating puzzle pieces in the slides. And I had a longer than necessary conversation with a colleague about those puzzle pieces. Did they count as images? Were they decorative? Did they enhance the learning? They weren't who, why, how much, when, any of those categories though. So I'm wondering if this layer of presentation design is hindering my work or helping it. So jury is still out, but it definitely keeps me thinking about my presentation design. And then I also missed an opportunity to help tell a story. Mm. I know that this small team presentation that I worked on was what Dan Rome called a report, and that we wanted to change the audience's information, but I didn't get to influence the story as much as I had hoped with the rest of the team that were my collaborators, but I'll keep trying. And so I guess recognizing that it was a little bit of a fail is a step in the right direction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I also like you recognizing and asking, is this helping or hindering my work? I'm imagining being your colleague as you are thoughtfully considering a floating puzzle piece and then being like, I don't know, we should just do this presentation probably. So I like naming that as well.
Yes, I think my colleagues may be ready to just finish the slide.
Well, we're always learning. And right. So I always love learning from you, whether it's a big picture concept or even a quick tidbit to share. That being said, what do you have for us as your quick win this week?
I heard about this new to me Chrome extension at a recent Learning Forward meeting, and it's called Tango. This tool captures screenshots automatically and instantly generates a step-by-step instruction guide. So you click through a process and then you get zoomed in screenshots on exactly what you clicked, and then text with steps like choose the add-on menu, then select the theme builder. You can edit the text and include additional details, and then you have a guide of all the steps. So I'm thinking of how many times I've had to walk through, for instance, installing an add-on or using this particular tool. And so now I can create a page with those steps illustrated and not having to do individual screenshots and put them in a document. And so I think also it will be great for pre-emails for sessions or for asynchronous courses.
Yes.
And then I'm also imagining in longer face-to-face sessions, I often give 25 minutes or 30 minutes of work time, and I have a lot of choice. So if there were steps to install something, or here's where you select this part to choose this option, then I can have that little instruction guide with screenshots so people can work independently and use that process sheet as a scaffold as necessary.
Oh my goodness, that sounds perfect and just in time learning, kind of like your share one of the last times. Yes, I love, I mean, think of all the times that you have taken those screenshots and built your own how-to guide. Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds great.
Mm-hmm. It reminded me of a similar tool called IORAD, which was described on the podcast many episodes ago.
Okay.
But IORAD is a bit fancier and it's more expensive than free. So I'm all for the Tango.
Give me that free option, right, please. good share. And I think just like last time, as soon as we're done recording, I'm going to install that and play around with that and save myself some time. So I love that.
Yay, good. All right. So let's go ahead and get to it. Laura, tell us the what of our what, so what, now what protocol, and share what it is that's inspiring you to learn this week.
Earlier in the week, I caught a tweet from the Learner-Centered Collaborative that took me to a blog post that, you guessed it, I haven't stopped thinking about. It's by Joanna Libby, who's a senior VP at the Learner-Centered Collaborative, and it's called, "You Are More Ready for Learner-Centered Than You May Think."
That is, I think, our typical hopscotching around. I saw a tweet, then it took me to a blog post, then it took me to this author or our book. So love that flow and can't wait to hear about it. So let's pull up our timer and in 60 seconds or less, tell us about being more learner-centered than we may think.
So the first thing is the post defines this phrase learner-centered as envisioned ecosystems that empower all learners to know who they are, thrive in community, and actively engage in the world as their best selves, which amazing definition, I love. From there, though, it tackles the relevant question of, okay, this sounds great, but when is learner-centered education ever going to actually be possible? And so the post answers the question with four readiness indicators to help you discover where you are on a continuum of change as you consider, how will you know when you're ready to shift to learner-centered? So here they are. First, you put relationships first. Second, you acknowledge what learners do well instead of focusing on their weaknesses. Third, you are aware of implicit bias. And four, you have mourned the loss of the system that raised you. There's my timer, but the intended takeaway of this post is the same as the title, which is, you are more ready than you think.
Oh, goodness, Laura, this sounds like it's going to be a fantastic conversation. And I bet connected to everything that we've already talked about in the last two seasons. So tell us, so what about this post that is inspiring you to learn?
I think this post really inspired me and spoke to me because, frankly, we're in this weird time in education right now. And I feel like so many of us felt the possibilities of change and transformation and rethinking the way we've always done things, and that we really were on the precipice of possibility for big changes as the pandemic forced us to rethink everything for a time and also, you know, really open some eyes and related conversations about cracks in our systems. And I know we have made some changes in the right direction and we're thinking about what is truly best for students, but we have a long way to go as well. And I haven't seen that ubiquitous sweeping change that I had hoped for a number of reasons. So getting it back to the inspiration, the fact that this post tackled that question that I've personally heard educators say this year of, sure, this sounds good, but when would that actually work? That really spoke to me and inspired me to share it today. And as a person who is invested in designing learning experiences that promote that student agency and a learner-centered model, this blog post had everything I needed.
Okay. Well, I think you're right that it's almost disappointing, like that we have been at this inflection point and we're not seeing these sweeping changes that we had hoped for. So yeah, on the precipice is the right phrase there. So Let's hear a little bit more. I think you mentioned four indicators of readiness to shift to learner-centered. So will you walk us through each of those?
I will. So the first is pretty standard. You put relationships first, but I actually really related to the opening sentence of this section, which says, admittedly, I used to think the getting to know you stuff was fluff. In hindsight, that couldn't have been further from the truth. And I can remember in my previous life as a serious high school AP English teacher who definitely took herself and that class too seriously for a while. Mm-hmm. And so that section of the post really just takes through some examples from Joanna's own classroom experiences and emphasizes connection over content, mm-hmm. and reiterates it can be a small daily act or a larger experience. But as we all know, relationships first, and again, that connection over content mm-hmm. is so important.
I'm seeing connections to our design for belonging conversations, mm-hmm. the conversations of collective mechanisms from last season. I think one of your big takeaways is recognizing just the humanity and talking about the importance of relationships. So that shift is huge. And I think so important. I can see that we are, a lot of us are moving in that direction and recognizing that. So, okay, I can check and agree with that.
Okay, perfect. And that's what I liked really as an entry point of, okay, you want me to change things. Uh-huh. And so the first question is, all right, well, do you put relationships first? And I think a lot of us can say, well, actually, yes.
Okay, keep going with these indicators.
Sure. So the second readiness indicator for this learner-centered design is acknowledging what learners do well instead of focusing on their weaknesses. Joanna suggests that we shift our thinking, and I love this phrase, divert some of our mental energy that we spend on identifying and tracking student areas of growth, and instead spending some of that energy applying it toward acknowledging what learners do well. So in this section, she talks about her own classroom and students working together on a big project. Her example was students creating a mock trial in her eighth grade social studies class, and her taking that opportunity to step back and have students collaboratively determine their roles instead of her kind of default thinking of assigning roles for students to do based on the desire to grow a specific skill that she knows about in each student. And that it was really difficult to step back at first, but it helped to hone and kind of further develop skills for so many of her students in the long run. And so she says, acknowledging what people do well rather than focusing on their weaknesses will always cultivate more learning and growth. And I really like the just simplicity of that statement, but thinking more deeply on it, I think that's really important to remember with students, but certainly also with teachers and adult learners.
We've seen so much information, tweets, articles about the learning loss and how that is the topic of so many conversations now. So I really love this second indicator, focus on the strengths rather than the weaknesses.
Yeah. Well, and this makes me think about our conversation about design for belonging, that making sure all students know you belong here and you're a learner, and part of being a learner is not being right all the time, but truly growing. And so focusing on what everyone is doing well is such a more inclusive maybe, or environment that reminds all students that they belong there. So that's kind of on my mind as well.
Okay. So keep going with the next indicator.
Okay. So moving along this continuum, it starts to get a little bit deeper. And so that third indicator is being aware of implicit bias. And so she includes a photo of a sticky note that lives on her desk and it guides her thinking. And here's what it says. So it says, check your bias. Is this a preference? Is this a tradition, or is this a requirement? And so I love these three modes of thinking. Here's her example to go further. She talks about her students advocating to freely choose their own seats during a seventh grade reader's workshop, and how the preference part of her was thinking, no, things are much better when I assign the seats. And then she says the tradition part of her was thinking, no, I read in these hard chairs as a student growing up, and I turned out just fine. But then after recognizing that there is some bias in her default thinking, she thought about, okay, what actually are the requirements of independent reading? So she decided to change that thinking. And so I love this. They ended up creating an independent reading rubric, and she concluded that time, each time they did it, to ask the question, did our seat choice today enable us to get lost in a book? And so I love the simplicity of asking about your preference, tradition, or requirement as just an easy check for some maybe not so easy thinking, and using it as a way to consider doing things beyond the way we've always done them that seems less sweeping and more doable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so have you thought about how this might look with adult learners or for some of the sessions that you've already presented or created?
Absolutely. And so I think it is a good check, even though I don't really want to check my bias, because I'm like, I like my preference. My preference is best. But as I'm thinking about creating these atmospheres that really do support belonging, remembering to check others' preferences and not just design in the way that I love to attend training. We all know I love breaking tradition. So I like that question as well. But really continuing to think, okay, do we need to do things the way we always have? And then really just honing in on that requirement, or maybe our purpose, that can circle back to our focused INGs. What are we truly trying to do here? And maybe getting out of our own way, thinking about the biases that come from our preferences or traditions.
Well, the word preference is the one that really stuck in my head as you were describing it, really just thinking like, oh yeah, I do things this way and I like the way I do these. So how can I overcome that bias there? So I'll be thinking about these questions as well. Okay, tell us about the final indicator.
Okay, so jumping ahead, this one got me. The fourth indicator is mourning the loss of the system that raised you. So I'll read the sentence that I really had to pause to digest and then talk about it a little further. So she writes, to embrace the world of unknowns in a learner-centered system, first, you have to pay the old system respect and mourn your loss. So she talks about how, despite being an advocate for changing, you know, the problematic factory model system of education that really does fail to meet the needs of all learners, that even though she advocates for that, she ultimately had to recognize that, like it or not, that model is her default and the system that she knows most deeply and shaped who she is in many ways. And so I had to pause and really think about this one, because it's true. And it's a good reminder, particularly when I am working with teachers and I'm ready to lead us into doing things in a new way that might be better for students, or probably is better for students this way. But pausing or having at the forefront of my mind to remember, the old system is our collective or even ubiquitous default, and it's okay to recognize that. But again, get to that point where we mourn the loss of it so we can move to shift away from those defaults.
Wow. Okay. I see why that really made you pause,
right?
And think. And I still see so many people where the default is stand and deliver, whether it is adults presenting to adults or teachers presenting to students. It is that style that is presenter driven rather than learner centered. So that also reminds me of Marie Kondo. Thank you for bringing me joy.
Let's get rid of it. Okay. Absolutely. Well, and I'm thinking, you know, we are collectively tired, and, you know, the pandemic broke so many things, and this kind of desire to get back to normal, just have some sense of calm or normalcy, I think put a lot of us, if we are teachers, if we are designers of learning, if we are whatever, kind of put us into our defaults of thinking or modes of operating. And I think that's part of the tension or weirdness of like, no, this is the time to change. And so I just really loved the phrase and the thinking behind, you know, acknowledge what our default is and then mourn the loss that, like, it is not that time anymore. It's 2022 now. So I accept it. I mourn it and I'm ready to move on.
Okay. So keep going, Laura.
So there's also some reality there of we are not saying break everything or the default is dead, like it's new entirely. But she gives some concrete examples of some default thinking that she didn't realize she was still hanging on to until she had a daughter. So in the post, she talks about her four-year-old daughter and that in her mind, again, even though she's an advocate for change in education, that default thinking about the school day comes down to what is done each day, like school equals what did you do? And so there's that classic question maybe over dinner time that's like, hey, what did you do in school today? And the students are always like, nothing. And so that has caused her to shift the questions that she asks her own daughter to be questions that are more learner-centered and that honor that learning is authentic, relevant, and personal to the student or to her daughter. So here are some questions that she gives as an example, thinking about agency. What did you learn about yourself today? Collaboration. How did you help a friend today? Or thinking about real world problem solving. What did you learn about the world today? And so I liked that just shift in language to put the learner centered, because we're talking about being learner centered designers in our classes. So I thought that that was a tangible shift as we're talking about these big ideas.
Okay. Well, I see why this article made you pause and think, and I know I will be pondering these ideas as well. So is there anything else you'd like to share?
Mostly, I just wanted to share that I was delighted by the sample answers that she gave to these sample questions from her four-year-old daughter. So thinking about what did you learn about yourself today? The sample answer she gave was, I don't like laying down during nap time because I get cold. And I love that as I like, that's a perfect four-year-old response. And that is agency. And you did learn that about yourself today. It sounds like me saying, I don't like working where there isn't a window because I feel sad.
Okay. I will now start thinking about what kinds of language can I use for adult learners and thinking about reflection. How could we put those same types of questions in our sessions and tying back to Katie Martin, if you want to change how students learn, you have to change how teachers learn. So modeling these behaviors in our sessions will hopefully help teachers understand what it feels like to be learner-centered, and then they can do that in their own classrooms.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm glad that you mentioned Katie Martin, because the Learner Center Collaborative really is her thing, her company. And so I considered talking about her recent book. It's called Evolving Education, Shifting to a Learner-Centered Paradigm. And so I couldn't figure out how to be concise enough to talk about an entire book, but I'll link it in the show. And she has the opportunity for you to read the first chapter for free. So I'll put that in as well. But in our theme of all things are connected, I think Katie Martin was the impetus for me even following the Learner Center Collaborative on Twitter, which is where I saw this post.
Okay. All right. So as you know, we want our episodes to be a place for us to launch further thinking. We want to challenge each other to apply what we share as we consider now what. So Laura, now what? What are some next steps from here to incorporate ideas about being ready to design for learner-centered into your work or further your learning?
So first, I think I really do want to incorporate these four readiness indicators into some of my sessions that specifically focus on designing for student choice or agency. I think that it does a good job breaking down this kind of buzzword or big idea and going back to the question of, yeah, that sounds good, but how does that actually work? I just liked how concise it was, and I liked that it was set up on a continuum. So I think that this is something that I will share directly into some of my sessions this summer. I think I also want to share that really well-written definition of learner-centered that I read at the top that was part of this post. So I really liked the language there. And then finally, I think I'm just going to continue ruminating on that fourth indicator, which is mourning the loss of the system that raised you, and just keep that more on the forefront of my mind, particularly as I lead work that is innovative and different from that system.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So maybe we need to develop some rituals on mourning the loss of the system, like crumble it up on the paper and throw it away or something.
I like that. I like that. I could get into that.
Yeah. We'd also like to extend the invitation to you, dear listener, to share your ongoing story of learning as well. Take a moment to pause and think wherever you're listening from and consider, what ideas have you heard today that have sparked your interest and inspired further learning about being ready to design for learner-centered?
And remember, we are dedicated to transforming our thinking about professional learning and know that seat time in a traditional session is not the only way to learn. We continue to be inspired by conversations that shape and change our behaviors, and we want to honor this and alternative forms of PD. So this season, join us for an experiment. And after listening to our episode, you're invited to complete a reflection form linked in the show notes to share what you learned and how you plan to integrate the information. You'll then receive a certificate of credit for your thoughtful responses. You can also find us on Twitter at @DigLearnRadio to continue the conversation and share your own learning that's inspiring you this week.
This season, we're dedicated to sharing our learning and the things that are inspiring us. We hope that when we share, the conversation and ideas will cultivate curiosity and inspire you to explore one of the resources, reflect on a question we've asked, or continue the conversation with us online. Reflect to consider the what, now what, and so what of your thinking. Share your learning inspirations and ideas from this episode and beyond. We are, as ever, inspired to learn from Gail Allen and her work in the new pillars of modern teaching. She reminds us that when we share, we add a sentence to the story we communicate about ourselves to the world. Let's continue learning, sharing, and transforming. Let's get inspired.